Welcome to the Upward Running Podcast, where faith fuels your fitness journey.
Welcome back to the Upward Running Podcast. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail, where you can in turn inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. Well, I am your running host, Dean Thompson, coming to you once again from the Upward Sports Studio. You know, we're going to talk about pencils today. What else would we talk about?
Random.
And then I'm going to make an argument that our mind and our body are not two different things, but in fact, are one and the same. And joining me again for those stories and much more is Upward Running Director Mitchell Hollis.
So I saw your note, and we're in the schizophrenic part of the year where weather is just, you know, it's crazy.
Yep.
It's crazy.
7 to 70 is our range right now.
Yeah. It's short sleeves to bundled up. I mean, it seemed like just yesterday I was doing that little shin splint video, and it was snowing like gangbusters out here.
Yeah.
And then we're out here in shorts and swatting mosquitoes. And so, hey, I'm doing something next week that I'm really excited about. Wade Taylor. You've met Wade, haven't you?
Yeah.
So I'm going on the road with Wade. Wade is one of the he's an account rep. He's the one that he's the contact for a lot of the churches.
Yeah.
So we're going to visit a lot of churches through Mississippi and Louisiana, and I've never been to Louisiana. We're going to like Baton Rouge and all these places. He said the seafood's great, so I'm excited to get on the road with Wade. Wade's a runner as well.
Yeah.
And so he's excited about the new church model. We've got new churches coming in. It's exciting to see what's going on around here.
Yeah. Wade's an all-around good guy.
And you're
going to St. Petersburg. Saint
Pete for the marathon.
Leaving here in a little while to head down there and watch some people run marathon, half marathon, and have some fun with them.
That should be a lot of fun. And we had I sent you a picture. I can't name any names yet, but we had a great conversation with a potential ambassador who might be coming on here in a few weeks.
Big name, huge name.
I mean, I was pinching myself just to be talking to them.
Yeah.
And just a lot of cool things. Like I said, the church model's up and going. The app is launched. People are starting to come into it. We're doing the final tweak. You know, anytime you open up a piece of technology and you let a lot of people in at one time, you're going to find things. And that's what we're doing. We're finding the little things, the little hiccups here and there. IT team is doing incredible. The app looks great. It's user-friendly. I mean, just the social side of it. You know, we have all those different rooms in there, breakout rooms. I don't even know what we're calling those. But basically, we have the national page, and then we have like Iron Sharpening Iron, which is a kind of a men's group. I know we have a ladies-only group, which because I put male in when I signed in, I don't even see that group because that's for ladies only.
Not for you.
We have walkers chasing big goals. And so it's everything I hoped it would be, and it's only going to get better from here.
That's
so
right.
If you're not in there yet, go to upwardrunning.com. You got to create an account right there, and then you'll be able to log in, download the app onto your phone, log in, and you can track your runs. You can do all the things. So,
yeah, that was an important point, too. You do have to sign up on upwardrunning.com first before
which
you can log into the app.
Our other app was.
It
you
is.
Had to go online, sign up, and then come back and download the app on your phone. You don't download and create an account
on the app.
On your phone. You do that at upwardrunning.com. And it's because we have the store, and there's a lot of logistics behind the scene. And so we chose to create your account at upwardrunning.com. And that makes it really cool, so that anything you can do on your app, with the exception of tracking and a few other things, you can do on your computer.
Yeah.
So if you want to look at your workouts, or you want to go and comment on the social aspects, you can do all that from your computer, which if it's app only, you can't do that. So that's why we made the decision to broaden it a little bit. So
very cool.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. How about our post of the week? It comes from Lynn Carroll McDonald. She says, 2 weeks ago, we're getting ready for snow. Mm-hmm. Today, I'm out running in shorts and a tank. Felt good to get out there. was trying to figure out how to get back into the app and such last night since I haven't been following a training plan for a while. See the info got posted today. Can't wait to get in and check it out. So we got ahead of ourselves a little bit there.
Yeah.
On both of those subjects. But yeah, there's a lot of folks out there that are getting excited about it and getting in there and checking it out. And if you got issues with it too, also let us know that.
That's the cool thing. And Brian hates for me to say this, but the guys that built that app, as amazing as it is, are on our team.
That's right.
I mean, they are in Spartanburg, South Carolina, or most of them are, and they're incredible.
Yeah.
And these are the type of people that could be making way more money somewhere else.
Yeah.
But they have a heart to reach people for Christ, and just like everybody at Upward does. And yeah, I mean, they're. But the cool thing about this app is, when you log in for the first time, you have the option to go in and create a training profile. So we've said it. It asks you questions about where you are in your training. Do you want to run? Do you want to walk? What kind of knowledge do you have about the sport? What is your growth track? You know, are you a brand new Christian, not a Christian, or, you know, you would give, you know, Billy Graham a run for his money? And it asks you all these questions, and then it creates a training plan specifically for you. So it's very unlikely if two people go in and create a training plan at the same time, and they're wanting to run a 5K, it's very unlikely they're going to have the same plan. Yeah. Because it's very customized to the individual.
Yeah.
And then we have the church model, which is back, which has not been around for several years, and we've got churches all over the country starting it. So I know I've said all that once already, but I'm just excited. Can you tell I'm excited?
Yeah, it's good stuff. It's good stuff. And there's other stuff in there, like, you know, the Bible in a year thing. A lot of people have done that with us.
I mean, well, now it's in the app. If you want to listen to Dean every day for 1 year,
bless your heart.
But it's great.
Yeah.
It's great content. And it's made it to where all this content, and now we're working on, you've actually started ahead of me, but getting all of the content in audio format. So you can listen to the Bible in the morning and hear Dean. And if you want to go over for a run and you still want to listen to Dean or me at some point. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
good stuff. Yeah,
if you can't tell, we're excited. We are.
It's good stuff. The run of the week comes from Jerry Siegler. She says, today marks my 365th day of run walk streak. Thanks, Patrick Hawkins, for the 1 mile a day February challenge last year. It was never something on my radar. Like Josh Johnson, God prompted me to keep it up for a full year. Rain or shine, I was faithful to get outside every day. Yearly total of 1,207 miles. Daily walks and runs add up quickly, and they inspire others to go out and do the same. This is great, and she did it the right way. The best way is she didn't go out and say, I'm going to run every day.
Sure.
She said, I'm going to run or walk or I'm going to do something.
I'm going to move.
Yes.
Yeah.
And because I think what happens a lot of times when we put something off, when we don't run today and we just put it off to tomorrow, I don't think we realize how many times we do that.
Sure.
And at the end of the year, you did it 180 times and missed half the year. And what a difference something like this would have been if, okay, I didn't go out for a run, but you know what I did do is I went out and I walked for 10,000 steps instead. It can make a huge difference. And those little things, like she says, it just adds up over time.
Yeah, it does. Yep. Bubba would be proud.
Yeah, Bubba would be proud. That's right. I've talked about Debbie's streak of 10,000 steps a day. She gets those in no matter what.
She's been doing that for a long time now.
A long time now, years. Yeah. And it makes a big difference in the way she feels. That's what we need to be doing. We need to get out. And it doesn't have to be running and walking. It can be cycling. It can be weightlifting. It can be swimming. It could be really anything that gets you out there and gets you moving.
Right.
So if you just like to hike, man, get out there and do that every day. It would make a huge difference.
Well, and do things that hold you accountable. I think at some point in this outline, you're talking about this, but, you know, I got a new watch. It's amazing how much a watch will hold you accountable, especially as smart as they are nowadays. I mean, this watch, I'm convinced I could get to the moon with it. But it gives you, I'm a stat geek guru. You know, I kind of fell away from that for several years. And now it's like, and the worst one is it tells me how I slept. Yeah. And I'm convinced. I'm convinced it's not accurate 100% because I can have a great night's sleep. I had a great night of sleep last night.
Yeah.
But my sleep score was like 76. And it's almost like there's something in me going, oh, I didn't sleep very good. When I know I did, I felt great when I woke up. So
76 is not bad. I think that may be, I think my highest sleep score since I've had this watch is 78.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm in the 80s and 90s.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, you're doing a better job than me then.
But so they're a great tool, but if it starts to discourage you, just ignore it.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Our trivia question from last week, how many heart rate zones are there in most heart rate training programs? Most programs have 5 heart rate zones. I've seen a couple with 6, but it's pretty much.
That's usually those pesky triathletes who throw the 6th one in there.
That's right. Yeah. But most of them are 5, and the heart rate thing is really important to some folks. So what are heart rate zones? What does that mean? Let's just talk about that really quickly. Heart rate zones are based on your maximum heart rate. Mm-hmm. So the first thing you have to do is you have to figure out what's my maximum heart rate. And there's a few different ways to do that.
Sure.
The most popular way and most generic way that you can do that is you can take the number 220, or I've seen some places where they advocate for using the number 230, but 220 minus your age, and that gives you your maximum heart rate. Now, that for me, that would mean my maximum heart rate is 161. If I use 230, it's 171. But then there's another way that you can do it, kind of a similar math thing. You take, and I've seen, again, two different numbers, 207 or 208 times 70% of your age. So take my age. I'm 59. Multiply that times 0.7 and then subtract that from 207 or 208. That gives me a maximum heart rate of 166 to 167. Again, right in the middle of those other ones. So those are some generic and easy ways that everybody can get their maximum heart rate. Or you can just go by what your watch tells you. Your watch, if you've got one of these smart watches we were just talking about, it will calculate your zones for you. Now, is it accurate? It's fairly accurate. And, you know, this is all, you have to understand that the difference between 132 beats per minute and 133 beats per minute is still just 1 beat per minute. It's not going to be, if one's in zone 2 and the other's in zone 3, that is not going to change everything about your workout. It's kind of a sliding scale.
Yeah.
That's right.
So, or you can do the workout that everybody loves, which is a max heart rate test.
Right.
Which, it's been a long time since I've done one or coached one, but I think it's 35 or 40 minutes. It takes longer than you, but you actually see how high you can get your heart rate.
Yep.
And which everybody doesn't need to do that. That because it's hard.
It is hard.
You've done one.
Yep.
I've done one. Down. I mean, there it is not. You're basically going to failure.
Yeah.
You're running your body to failure, and even that's not perfect.
Yeah. None of them are perfect. You know,
because you have a pain threshold of, you know, you think you're at max when you're really not. So,
have I ever told you what the highest heart rate I've ever counted myself at is? 240.
That's pretty high.
Yeah. I got there back when I was in high school.
Yeah.
We did these workouts where the idea was to run as hard as you could around a loop.
Yeah.
And then wait till your heart rate got back down to 120 before you went again. And I counted 240 beats. Now, you know,
that's counting,
give or take probably 10.
But now, to count, I've seen 220 on watches before with some of the kids, the younger kids when they were young. I mean, I don't see how their heart was staying in their chest.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget one time Lane was doing a max heart rate test and you could see it.
Yeah.
You could see it right there in his sternum.
Yeah.
You could see his heart beating. And I was like, well, that doesn't feel healthy. But
so then once you get that max heart rate, however you do it, then what you can do is you calculate those zones. And for, again, it's different from one program to the next, but most of them, zone 1 is 50 to 60%. Zone 2 is 60 to 70%. Zone 3 is 70 to 80%. Zone 4, 80 to 90, and then 90 to 100 for zone 1. So those are the zones that people talk about. The bottom line is, knowing where your heart rate, what your heart rate is capable of, and knowing where you are, should be valuable to your workouts. Mm-hmm. You know, right now the big thing is zone two training.
Yeah.
And has been now for a couple of years, where people feel like the more time you spend in zone two training, the better off you are. And when you do your easy runs, they should be zone two, mm-hmm. always zone two. And when you know what zone two is and you can feel that while you run, it gives you a really good feel for what, where you should be.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And, you know, I always liked zone three, because zone three is, that's where you find your threshold. Somewhere in there is where you find your, where you go from aerobic to anaerobic. Mm-hmm. That is found in zone three. And so I always liked coaching athletes to stay in zone three, because if you can find that threshold, that's, you know, that's where you learn to get fast for long, is finding out where that line is and staying just below it. But it's neither here nor there. It's simply a guide.
That's right.
To tell you, are you going hard enough or are you going too hard? That's the biggest takeaway from using heart rate.
It is.
You know, because you've always said most people don't go hard enough when it's time to run hard, and they don't run easy enough when it's time to run easy. Heart rate, will it pretty clearly delineates what's hard and easy.
That'll help.
We can all agree on that.
For sure.
Yeah.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
All right, we're back. And one thing I haven't talked about more recently, but I used to talk about every time in the podcast, was to talk about submitting your story. We need your story. We need to hear your story.
Because you have one.
You have one. And some people think they don't have one, or they don't have one that's exciting enough or what. Right. You have a story and somebody can relate to it. So I need you to get on the website, upwardrunning.com. And I need you to go to submit my story and submit your story and let us know. It walks you through the process. We need to hear your story and we need to share it right here on this podcast.
And we don't need all success stories. People think, well, I'll share my story once I succeed at whatever I'm about to do. No, we've got a lot of new people coming into this ministry right now. We want to hear your story, where you're at today.
That's right.
Maybe you've never run and you're about to start the Couch to Marathon. We've talked about this before, and we've yet to have anybody do this. We want to hear your story today.
Right.
Before you start.
Yeah.
What's going on in your life? What are your challenges? What are your fears? All this. And then we want to hear the success story at the end. So a lot of people are about to start the Couch to Marathon. I mean, literally, as this podcast is launching, you're about to start the Couch to Marathon. It may be the day this is launching. I'm not sure. I may have my days mixed. Anyway, share your story today.
Yeah. That'd be good. We need to talk about people sharing their stories. Elizabeth Rogers shared her story with us here a few weeks ago. And you remember she had talked about having a special diet. And I had asked the question, I wonder. She sent me a message.
Yeah, I got it too.
Did you? Okay. Yeah. And she was on a liquid only diet. And then she was on the vegetables diet, vegetables and protein. I still don't understand exactly what that means, but because some vegetables are proteins, right? Some beans are protein.
That's true, yes.
Right? So anyway, she went through quite a struggle there with eating. And she now is about to do her marathon in the Couch to Marathon plan. So
is she going to St. Pete?
No, she's doing it virtually. And she has told me that she promises to let me know when she does and let me know how it goes.
Yeah.
So we'll report back when we know.
Sure.
This story, why intense exercise kills appetite better than moderate workouts. This comes from a site called Study Finds. It's from the University of Virginia, and it's just published recently. And it talks about how the best way to suppress your hunger is to do intense workouts. Mm-hmm. So like HIIT workouts, mm-hmm. where it's really high intensity. And this is what it says. If you've ever noticed that an intense workout kills your appetite while a moderate jog leaves you heading straight for the kitchen, you're not imagining things. Scientists have now uncovered biological evidence explaining this phenomenon, and it centers around a hormone called ghrelin, otherwise known as the hunger hormone. Ghrelin is a hormone produced in the stomach that plays a crucial role in regulating appetite and food intake. So scientists at the University of Virginia conducted this study, published in the Journal of Endocrine Society, examining how different exercise intensities affect the level of ghrelin in the body. And what they found was that these super high-intensity workouts make you less hungry. And I can understand that. I know if I do a workout where I do a lot of sprints at the end, mm-hmm. my legs are wobbly, and I don't feel like eating anything. Mm-hmm. So this just passes the sniff test. Now, I'm not usually hungry after a run either,
right.
just a regular run. But it apparently, it also affects women more than men. So it suppresses women's appetite more than men. It says, beyond controlling appetite, ghrelin plays surprisingly diverse roles in the body, influencing energy balance, blood sugar control, immune function, sleep, and even memory. So this is a pretty cool study that says that we're not saying you shouldn't go out there and do your easy runs mm-hmm. at all. But if you want to suppress your hunger, the best way to do that, maybe a weightlifting session or something else where it's a little bit more intense can help with that. And the other side of that is recognizing that when you do go out and you for an easy run, sometimes it makes you hungry. Mm-hmm. And if it makes you hungry, you have to be aware of that.
Yeah.
And don't just go eat a bunch of stuff because that's going to pass mm-hmm. If you'll just let it. So I never heard of this ghrelin before. Had you?
I neither, no. No, but it's good. I mean, you know, we always talk about we like science to confirm what we were already thinking.
Yeah.
We don't like it to guide what we're doing, but we like data to confirm what we thought. And I mean, it does. It's... Anytime you go out and do a really hard session of anything, which I don't do a lot of anymore because it hurts, but you come back and you don't want to eat.
Yeah.
And it's dead on. You go out and do a short or something. You're like, oh, I've earned whatever I'm about to put in my mouth.
Don't do that.
So, yeah, it's good to understand this stuff.
Yeah. Well, have you ever made a mistake?
No.
I don't think I know anybody who hasn't. And this is about that very subject. And, of course, it comes from our very own, one of our favorites, Jerry Snyder.
Let me ask you something. When are you going to get him in here?
We've talked.
To be face-to-face.
We've talked. I want to.
You need to make that happen, Dean.
Yeah, yeah. I've even told him. I wouldn't mind heading up there.
Where does he live?
He lives in Ohio.
Okay.
Yeah, so he's not too far away.
No.
It'd be worth a drive to get him on the podcast because, I mean, he just sounds like... He sounds like a guy I could hang around with all day long.
Yeah.
Yep. So this one's called The Other End of the Pencil. Quote, a life spent making mistakes is not only more honorable, but more useful than a life spent doing nothing. That comes from George Bernard Shaw, playwright and political activist. Looking for a hot spot for your next vacation? Forget about London, Paris, Rome, and Tokyo. How about Logan, Ohio? Located there among the beautiful Hocking Hills is the world's largest pencil sharpener museum, started by a minister named Paul Johnson who needed a hobby after his retirement. You'll find over 4,000 pencil sharpeners on display. Cars, boats, airplanes, presidents, clowns, cats, fruits, and nuts, you name it, there's a sharpener. And lucky me, I live only 17 miles away. I could meet you there in 20 minutes. And speaking of pencils, did you know the average pencil can write about 45,000 words and draw a line 35 miles long? Around 14 billion pencils are produced annually, which is enough to circle the earth more than 40 times. Pencils can be sharpened 17 times and used underwater, in space, and upside down. Now let's talk about the other end of the pencil. Located there, you'll find an eraser. Its purpose can be summed up in two words: start over. Bo Bennett, entrepreneur and author, said, "It's not our mistakes that define who we are. It's how we recover from those mistakes." Conrad Hilton, businessman and co-founder of Hilton Hotels, observed, "Success seems to be connected with action. Successful people keep moving. They make mistakes, but they don't quit." Did you know there's a museum of failure located in Washington, D.C.? Its goal? Stimulate productive discussion about the important role of failure for innovation. Now it's time for a quiz. Do you know what the biggest pencil in the world is? You give up? The biggest pencil in the world is Pennsylvania. Okay, trick question. But now here's a real question. Do you know what the biggest mistake you can make is? According to author Elbert Hubbard, the greatest mistake you can make in life is to be continually fearing you'll make one. Very few of us get it right the first time. I have a friend who coaches Little League Baseball. Whenever one of his players drops a catch or strikes out, the whole team shouts, "Shake it off, shake it off. Next play, next play." Remember, erasers are there for good reason. And remind yourself, you had the courage to swing the bat in the first place. Babe Ruth, on the way to hitting 714 home runs, had 1,330 strikeouts, twice as much failure as success. Be thankful we have a God who believes in second chances. The fact is, the most important thing that can be said about erasers, He forgives, He forgets, and He is there to help you try again. Jeremiah 29:11 says, "For I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you and not harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future."
I think Jerry needs to be on Jeopardy.
Yeah.
He's got so many statistics in his head.
Yeah.
How many stories have we done of his by now?
I don't. He can tell us. I don't know.
10 or 15 at least.
Probably. At least. I think it's probably closer to 20.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone is just chock full of stats and quotes.
Yep.
Stats and quotes.
Yep. Well, he talks about Paul Johnson in here. I didn't know this Paul Johnson, but I know that Paul Johnson coached Georgia Tech football, for years. Mm-hmm. Won a few ACC championships.
Never heard of him.
Yeah. Of course you haven't, because you like the other guys. Well, I wonder how many pencils are made today versus 30 years ago. You would think that there wouldn't be nearly as many pencils made.
You wouldn't think.
With the advent of computers and tablets and things like that. But I wonder, because he talks about this like they're still making a lot of pencils. Now that we do still use pencils for things. I mean, I do woodworking. Mm-hmm. I use a pencil for woodworking a lot. But that's about the only time I ever use a pencil.
And I was thinking about this when you just said that. In school we had those Scantrons.
Yeah.
You remember the Scantrons?
Yeah.
And you had to use a number 2 pencil.
That's right.
I don't ever remember seeing another number on a pencil.
I've seen a number 1.
So what is that pencil indicating? Is that it like lead softness?
The hardness of the lead, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I always want, when we were in school, your teacher's like, "Make sure you use a number 2 pencil." I'm like, I've never seen a different number.
They're all number 2 pencils, aren't they? Yeah. Yeah, I agree. But you know what I found out?
What?
I looked this up. Hmm? There are like 20 different hardness levels. It's not just like number 1, number 2, number 3. It's there's 20 different levels.
Yeah.
And I thought that was fascinating. Like you said, I've never seen. You have seen, though. Like if you get like a
I know, like drafting pencils.
Drafting pencils and things
like
that.
They're like very hard because they need a fine point, and you can't have a really sharp point on a number 2 pencil.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you can, but it's not
it doesn't
sharp,
last very long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You get it wore in, broken, as I used to call it.
That's true. Well, erasers, when I was a kid, I remember having our pencils at school. Mm-hmm. You always had to buy one of those big erasers, mm-hmm. or at least I did, because I made too many mistakes.
That one on the end of the pencil wore out long before the pencil.
Yes, it did. And then you'd get it down to where it was just barely, and you'd start
scratching your paper.
Tearing the paper. Yeah. I'm showing my age, I think. But it's so important to be able to erase and fix things.
Sure.
I mean, that's Jerry's point here, is that we need to be able to go back and and retry things. And that's the way we used to learn everything. You know, today, if you got to fix something, you go on YouTube, you find a video and it tells you how to do it. Mm-hmm. Back in my day, we didn't have anything like that. You just had to figure it out.
Trial and error.
Yeah. You opened up the engine and you figured out what does it look like this thing does and how do you fix it?
Yeah. I mean, as great as YouTube and the internet in general is, I think it's cost us in the area of creativity.
I think it has.
Because, yeah, I mean, I used to take things apart just to figure out how it worked.
Absolutely.
You're that same brain. Mm-hmm. You know, my dad used to get so mad because I would take tools apart and he would come out there and then I couldn't figure out how to get them back together. But yeah, I think our creativity has gone down, no question.
Yep.
So anytime you get a chance, that's why, you know, set your phone aside and just think. We've lost the ability just to sit and be bored.
Yeah, you know.
Because creativity comes out of boredom.
I think you're right. And I think this comes from growing up the way I did and wanting to take things apart. But even today, I love just to look around at the architecture of something and see, I wonder how they did that. You know, it's fascinating to me to think about how you do things. And I think there's a lot of value in trying to figure those things out rather than just going to a YouTube video and going, I wonder how, you know, here's a...
Well, something we've done, and this has been in recent history, when we would travel on some of these races for Lane and Lane's triathlon. And I'll never forget the last time we did it. I think we were in Des Moines. But, you know, you go to Des Moines and it's just tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of acres of cornfields.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's roads on grid patterns. And I'll never forget, I drove out just as far as I could drive into cornfields. And I said, all right, everybody put your phones down. And we're going to figure out how to get back to town. Because, I mean, even with directions, I mean, we pull up our phone, we do-do-do, if we're going to the grocery store nowadays.
Yeah.
But the I don't know if I would call it a talent or what you would call it, but your bearings.
Yeah.
That is so important that you, we're getting way off pencils.
We are.
But, I mean, that kind of stuff is fun to me.
It is.
Put your phone down, try to get lost, and then try to get back.
And try to figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we had, I think, three kids in the back seat, and they were all, like, rolling their eyes, like, come, what are we doing, Dad? Yeah. You know, what is all this about?
Yeah. That's funny.
This will be very valuable one day when you get lost in a cornfield.
That's right. It will be, yeah. Philippians 3:13 says, but I focus on this one thing, forgetting the past and looking forward to what lies ahead. Hmm. I think we all have a difficult time forgetting about the past sometimes. But we do need to forget about it. We don't need to completely forget it. We need to learn from things and make sure we don't do those things again. Mm-hmm. And people are talking, you know, when you talk about forgiving somebody, for example, people talk about, well, I'm not going to forget what they did. We're not saying you put yourself in the same boat, but you do forgive them and forget so that you can move forward.
You use the past to put things in place so that it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not saying you dwell on it because, I mean, Paul does say he does use the word forget.
Yep.
But I think in this passage, I would have to go back and look, but I think what he's referring to is, you know, Paul in his former life, things were a lot different then. You know, his former life was, he was revered as a person. He was kind of on top, even though he was persecuting Christians, and he was saying, look, I'm not going to think about that. Because that was flawed, and I'm forgetting all that, and I'm marching ahead with a very different life that in today's, or in humanly perspective, is lower than that. But we know that it's inverted.
But he used that, and he also used that same passion from all of those things that he used that same passion in a better way.
Yeah.
So he learned from what he was doing.
Mark Yoho, it's always stuck with me. He said, if you, those that are the most vile and against you on social media, because we used to have people that would just troll social media
yeah.
and come out. And he said, if you can ever take those people and get them living for Christ, they're going to be the next Paul.
Yep.
You know, they're going to charge the gates of hell with a water pistol, you know, and in support of the kingdom of Christ. Yep. And so that's something you always have to keep in mind.
Absolutely. The other thing we can't do is dwell on success too much also.
That's probably more dangerous.
Yeah, because sometimes we get either complacent or we get cocky, or so we got to be careful not to dwell on the things that go right too, and move on to the next thing. It's kind of like, this is kind of why I like age groups in running. You know, it gives you something new to focus sure. on regularly. Every yeah. 5 years, you change age groups, yeah. and you get
runners
to start.
Are the only people that are glad when they get older.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. And if you can't move on from where you've been, man, it can cause so much trauma. I'm reading a book right now by a man who, well, he's a rich man, famous man, and he loses his wife and daughter within the span of a year. Mm-hmm. And he's devastated. Mm-hmm. And he decides to get on his motorcycle and drive and just, I mean, go. And I'm, you know, right now he's over 20,000 miles into this mm-hmm. motorcycle ride that he's doing. But he cannot, he's not a Christian, mm-hmm. and he cannot get rid of all of these feelings. And we have to be able to get past that. I'm not saying you shouldn't be distraught. If you lose your wife and daughter, I can imagine that would be really, really difficult. But God doesn't want us dwelling in the past. He wants us to move forward. And it's really sad to see people that can't.
I don't know. I guess talking about pencils made me think about this. You know, in my building background, when you're working with an architect, you know, that can be one of the more frustrating things is drawing architectural plans, because you're always second guessing, changing, moving. Erasers are great, but they're also a curse sometimes because I'm just going to change that. But one of the milestones meetings you have with an architect is called a page turn meeting. And it's literally where you move on to a next phase of architecture. You literally turn the page, and what you've done before is now set in stone, and you don't look back, because you'll never finish a set right. of plans if you're constantly going back. And I think that's a great illustration for what we're talking about here. It's you're doing it right, but there comes a time when you need to turn the page. Is that a Metallica song, Turn the Page?
Turn the Page was a Bob Seger song.
That Metallica redid.
Did they?
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, there's yeah. so... We get so far off track sometimes. Yeah.
But well, you know what I was thinking?
Turn the page. I mean,
yeah.
Remembering what was, you know, and then forgetting what was, and turn the page and move on. But we can get hung up in the past, and so many people go down deep holes of depression and all kinds of things because they just won't turn
yeah.
and look the other way.
I remember getting a chance to play golf at the farm one time. Beautiful, mm-hmm. you know, it's a beautiful mm-hmm. place to play.
Yeah.
I didn't get a chance to play there very much. I think this is the second or third time I'd ever played there.
Yeah.
And I had this in my mind. I wanted to shoot a certain score yeah. before I went there. Well, it didn't go well over the first few holes. And I was getting so worked up. You know how it is with golf, because I couldn't forget what I was doing.
I know how it is with golf, and I know yeah. how it is with you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you could imagine. But, you know, at some point in time, I finally said, you know what? It's a beautiful day. The weather was gorgeous. This is a beautiful place. And I've got myself tied up in knots
yeah.
when I should just be enjoying myself. And I just said, I'm just going to enjoy myself. Doesn't matter what the score is.
You turn the page.
I turned the page.
Yeah.
And you know what happened? Probably the best round of golf I've ever played in my life.
And isn't that crazy? I mean, we can do that literally. It's no coincidence that they call it the turn.
Yeah.
You know, going from 9 to 10 is the halfway point, and usually going to get something to eat. You can do that on your golf. I played Sunday with a group of guys.
Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of dipping my toe back into golf. I shot a 54 on the front. I was so tied up in the knots, I was ready to quit the game. And I shot a 42 on the back.
Yeah.
That's the epitome of schizophrenia
yep.
when it comes to the game of golf. But it was nothing changed. I didn't all of a sudden get better. I didn't all of a sudden hit the button. It's my mentality. I had that mental page turn.
Yep.
And we need to learn to do that on a daily. I need to learn to do that on an hourly basis sometimes.
Yeah. Because if you think that when you dwell on something and you're upset about something, if you think that's not affecting you.
Oh.
It is.
Yeah.
Because you'll tell yourself on the golf course, oh, that one, that last hole is not affecting me. But it is.
Sure.
And it's clear.
Yeah.
To the people that are looking on the outside.
Yeah.
We got to move on. Talk about moving on. Psalm 34:18 says, the Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit.
He leaves the 99 for the one.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Shouldn't leave is a strong word. He doesn't leave. But he goes after the one.
Give special attention to the one that needs it. Yep. God's there. He knows when we need a boost. And I'm convinced that he's just there when we need it, no matter what that is, where we are, whatever situation we're in. The sad part is that when you're in a situation like this motorcycle rider I was talking about, God wants to comfort him,
mm-hmm.
but he's not allowing it.
Mm-hmm.
And we do that too. Even as Christians, we do that.
Sure.
God wants to comfort us, but we refuse to let go of something and let him do that.
I just wonder why that is, because we understand these principles. We know that it's better to let go. We know it's better to be comforted by... What is that noise? I just completely saw a rabbit. Yeah. Anyway, we understand the principle of letting go and moving on. But that shows you how powerful the evil one is, that we have the head knowledge. We have the experience from times that we've done it before. And this is where I always say it is important to look back, because we need to look back on when we've successfully allowed God to intervene on our behalf. But then we get to today and we're like, no, this is different.
Yeah.
It's not.
Yeah.
It's not.
Totally. Ephesians 4:2. Always be humble and gentle. Be patient with each other, making allowance for each other's faults because of your love. How much better would the world be today if we just showed each other a little bit of grace?
Yeah.
But we live in it's the worst in politics. It's like we can't wait to demonize mm-hmm. somebody when it comes to, and I don't know how many times I've heard people say, and this goes back to politics. We're not going to talk about specific politics, but I've heard people say, so-and-so is trying to destroy the country.
Nope.
No. I mean, are there a few people that might be doing it? Maybe. But those people are crazy, and they're very few and far between. Most people think they're doing things that are for good.
Sure.
And if we would allow ourselves to think about people like that, it makes a difference in how we
deal with people. You give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, we can disagree with them.
Sure.
We can totally disagree. You and I disagree on some stuff, but it doesn't cloud our judgment and get in the way, and it doesn't cause us to have this animosity built up inside of us for no reason at all. Yeah. But we see that so much in today's world. And you know, I've thought about it from a running standpoint. It would be really easy for me as a fairly fast runner to look at somebody and go, I don't understand why you have such a problem.
Yeah.
It's easy. Just put one foot in front of the other.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I mean, pick it up, dude. What's with the 12-minute pace, you know? You know what I mean? It would be easy for me to do that, but I don't do that. And why don't I do that is because, you know, I'm trying to put myself in their shoes and understand it's not the same for everybody, and I want to be compassionate.
Yeah. And probably the person that we have the hardest time extending grace to is ourself.
Yeah.
I struggle with that. I think you do too.
Yep. For sure. For sure. That's a mouthful. Question. Did you ever make a mistake that turned out to be a blessing?
Yes. What is that sound, Dean?
It's my foot.
Okay.
Sorry.
You're hearing live what I go through on a daily basis. Yeah. I'm just like, so I chase rabbits.
Anyway. And I can't stop bouncing my foot up and down. So.
Yes. I mean, probably the greatest example is in my life is running. I had allowed running to become an idol in my life. But isn't that the great thing about Christ? Is we can do something wrong, which allowing a sport to rise above Christ is a sin. He can bring that to our attention. And then he can use the very same thing that was a sin in our life to bring honor and glory to himself and to share his love with other people. Only God can do that.
That's right. Yeah. My mind went to something that happened to me when I was in college. I had a speech class. I think I've told this story on here before, but I had this speech class and I was supposed to give my speech on a Wednesday. It was a Monday, Wednesday, Friday class. And it was Monday. And so I'm sitting back and I'm going to watch the other classmates. I'm going to watch them do their speech. And then the teacher called my name and I was not prepared to give my speech. And so I had to decide, was I going to admit that I wasn't ready or was I going to get up and go give that speech? Well, I got up and went and gave that speech. Mm. And I got an A on it. Mm-hmm. I say that to say, you know what that did for me was it was a terrible mistake. I obviously wasn't paying attention. I'm sure it was supposed to be my day. I just misread or misunderstood something. And what happened was it built some confidence
gave you
in myself.
A license to be last minute
well,
on everything.
Yeah. That's the way I usually tell that story. But it also gave me confidence to realize that just because you're not completely prepared for something doesn't mean you can't, you know, do the best you can with what you've got.
Sure.
And so that turned out to kind of be a blessing for me. Is there a mistake you need to forgive yourself for? It goes back to what you were talking about a few minutes ago. I don't know. I will dwell on the mistakes that I make for a short period of time, but then I'm pretty well ready to move on.
Mm. You know, we have a lot of practice in it. Make a lot of them
for sure. Yeah, and you can always go back and look at things you wish you'd done differently.
I mean, I think you and I are both wired the way that we're not afraid to fail. Yeah. I've never been afraid of failure.
Yeah.
Some people are paralyzed by it.
Yeah.
And there's a happy median there that I need to find somewhere sometimes. But, yeah, I've never been afraid of failure. And when I do fail, I don't know why. When you said shake it off a while ago, for some reason Taylor Swift popped in my head. I'm pretty quick to shake it off. You know, it's like, okay, that's done. I dwell on a lot of things, but I don't dwell on mistakes usually.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to do things is just to move on. Again, we're back to moving on.
Turn the page.
Last one. Is there something you need to someone you need to forgive for making a mistake?
You know, I'm pretty clean here. And I say that only because I once wasn't clean here. You know, God really convicted my heart years ago about some people that I needed to go seek forgiveness from and I needed to go forgive. And it was a radical thing. I mean, there was like a list of people that I had to work through and that was hard and painful, but I'm so glad I did it.
Yeah.
And I say this to people, you know, can you forgive somebody and not go tell them? Yes, you can. There is something that happens when you go see them face to face. Some of the people that I went and saw, one in particular, didn't think they needed forgiven. But God released me from that bondage even still. He confirmed it in my heart that, you know, you need to pray for this guy because he's not accepting forgiveness. And I don't know. So I say that I'm clean here, but I once wasn't. And I'm telling everybody listening, if there's somebody in your life, because it's creating bondage for you, not the other person. A lot of times they don't even know it.
That's right.
Is the bad thing. And we have it built up in our head like they're doing something intentional.
Mm-hmm.
Usually not the case. Go talk to them. Extend forgiveness and ask forgiveness. in a physical, not via text, not email. Go to these people face to face. It's very, very freeing.
Yeah. Yeah. It can make all the difference.
Yeah.
And yeah, be quick to forgive people too. You know, when you get to that point where the same person transgresses you over and over again, then you maybe get to a point where you don't go there anymore and you don't allow them to do something that you have to forgive.
And that becomes your fault at some point.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. But I'll never forget a pastor of one of these mega churches. One time he did this study on forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And the way he put it was, you have to forgive everybody every time for everything they have ever done against you. Mm-hmm. And that's what the Bible tells us. And that's very clear.
70 times seven.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's no ambiguity about forgiveness in the Bible. Mm-hmm. And that's who we are to be. And if we're not that person, if we are not forgiving other people, we are not doing what the Bible tells us to do. Just plain
we're sinning.
We are sinning.
Yeah.
And we all do it.
Sure.
But when I come to that realization of just that thought of me not forgiving someone is wrong and it's a sin and I need to change that, makes a difference. Mm-hmm. And I think that to your point, you are the one who suffers when you don't forgive somebody, not them. And
exactly.
So, yeah. Do you need something to keep you motivated and to keep fit both physically and spiritually? Upward Sports Run for God Run Club has just what you need to keep you on track for both. Check out runforgod.com and join us today for pennies a day. You won't regret it. All right, we're back. Here's another study from that same place, Study Finds.
Pretty study-heavy today.
It's a pretty cool site, yeah. Study Finds. Yeah. It's really neat. Why changing running shoes could triple your injury risk. New study reveals critical flaw in how runners choose their shoes. This one's from the University of Florida. And picture yourself running down a trail or treadmill. Do you land on your heel first, a rear foot strike, or do you land on the middle or front of your foot, non-rear foot strike? If you're like most runners in a new comprehensive study of 710 participants, you might be wrong about your answer, and that misconception could be setting you up for injury. So what we found was, in this study, that most people do not know that they land on their heel when they run. Most people think they land on their whole foot, and they don't. And that makes a huge difference in selecting running shoes, number one, and about all these things. It says that only 42.7% of runners could accurately identify their foot strike pattern. Less than half of people know what their foot strike pattern is. And of course, as is in anything, you need to understand what you're doing before you can fix things. So, and it turns out 81% of people are rear foot strikers, that's not a surprise to me, but it's obviously a surprise to a lot of people because a lot of people think they're not rear foot strikers when they are, which makes this significant, has garnered considerable attention over the last 15 years as potential contributors to running related injuries in the running and the running economy. These big, thick soled shoes have, and they say 15 years, this has been going on for 40 years, that the thoughts are that these thick soled shoes are causing people to be a little too confident and causing more shock in their body and causing more injuries. And that turns out this study proves that. They analyzed, again, for runners, data from 700 runners across 6 years, making it one of the largest and most comprehensive studies of its kind. Beyond simple awareness, shoe characteristics emerged as a crucial factor in both injury rates and foot strike detection accuracy. After accounting for several variables, shoe heel-to-toe drop proved to be a consistent predictor of both accurate strike detection and running-related injuries. Higher heel-to-toe drops were associated with a lower likelihood of accurate foot strike detection and increased injury risk, meaning that people who have a higher drop ratio from the back of the shoe to the front of the shoe tend to not know what their foot strike pattern is. The people who run in a flatter shoe tend to know more. Most intriguing findings. Runners who admitted they didn't know their strike pattern had the highest prevalence of running-related injuries, 73%, compared to 56% and 58% for self-reported non-rear foot and rear foot strikers, respectively. This suggests that body awareness might play a crucial role in injury prevention. So, shoe characteristics, we see this all the time. Mm-hmm. One of the things this study showed is that runners who change their footwear, change the shoe, that not get a new shoe of the same one, but change to a different one, are three times more likely to sustain an injury than somebody who's running in the same shoe. I've seen it. I've got a friend of mine now who's going through an Achilles issue, which I believe was started by him running in one shoe that was had a normal drop and another shoe that was relatively flat. That is so bad for you to do that.
And it can be such a small, I mean, a couple millimeter drop difference doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're talking thousands and thousands of repetitions, it's a big deal.
I feel the difference myself. I can feel it. I mean, I have, as soon as I put on a shoe that is two, like you said, 2 millimeters difference, I can feel it in my calves.
Sure.
The first day I run in those shoes.
Yeah. A lot of people's calf muscle issues can be directly correlated back to changing their shoes.
Yep. Calves and Achilles.
Yeah.
Those two injuries.
And it's because we go to the store and a lot of people say, oh, I like that shoe.
Yep.
And it's millimeter drop difference. It's a structured shoe and not a flat shoe. It's a completely different shoe. And that's why I always say, when you find a shoe that works, don't change it. But to me, there's a bigger issue going on here. And I don't know why we keep comparing everything over to golf today, but I've been looking at a new driver. You know, my driver is 25 years old. And I thought, you know, this new technology, like, you can hit the ball further with these new clubs. There's no question. And so I was looking at a driver the other day, and I was kind of pulling the ball, and, you know, wasn't hitting it straight. And the guy said, let me see it. And you can adjust these drivers now to compensate. It's weighted in the back, and you can change the weights now to compensate for a hook or a draw or a push. And I was kind of flippant when I said it. I said, I don't like that. He said, why? I said, how about I fix my swing?
Yeah.
You know, because if I get used to that, then that driver breaks and I have to borrow somebody's drive. Man, I'm going to be pulling off to the left and everything I do. So I think people do this with shoes rather than fix your form, because some of this is form related.
Sure.
You know, the best way to understand what you're doing foot strike wise is go out and run some barefooted. You'll find out real quick whether you're a midfoot or a heel striker.
Amen.
Because it hurts.
That's right.
And sometimes that is things that you need to fix. Now, sometimes it's not. It's okay. Like, we've used the example of Rebecca Poe a few times. She is the opposite of heel striker.
Yeah.
Her heel never touches the ground. And that really, you thought that was causing some issues and you tried to change it, and that created a whole other set of problems. So, but understanding and trying to fix the problem rather than masking the problem, which, let's be honest, a lot of these completely cushioned shoes are just masking a problem.
Yeah.
They're masking an issue, just like changing the angle of a driver so you don't hook it is my swing is messed up. I need to fix my swing.
Yeah.
And sometimes we need to fix our form and not rely on the shoes to do it.
Totally agree with that.
I don't know if that all makes sense or not, but...
Yeah, and one of the things that was kind of buried in here that wasn't really part of it was part of the study, but it was kind of tangential to the main point of the study, was that it showed that people who get injured more tend and heel strike more tend to not bend their knees as much. And what that tells you is the more you bend your knee as you run, the more you're allowing your body to take the shock. Mm-hmm. The straighter your leg is when you land, the more your body is absorbing all that shock all the way up through your body. And to me, that was one of the biggest things was if we just kept our hips forward, bent our knees a little bit more, it could make all the difference in injuries.
Imagine jumping off of a 2-foot box with your knees locked.
Yeah.
It's going to hurt bad.
Yeah.
And that's what happens when you have these people that straighten their knee in extension and then they're a heel striker on top of that. It's just sending all that right up through the body and it's bad for you.
Really and it is. Doesn't hurt because you're wearing these really cushioned shoes. So, right. But your body feels it.
Sure.
Regardless of whether you can, it hurts.
It doesn't hurt your foot. Therefore, you don't think about it as much. But
yep.
Yank those shoes off and go run on a driveway or some concrete somewhere. And that's the best indicator. It's kind of old school, but it's the best indicator.
Yep. So again, back to Achilles or calf issues. If you have either one of those, check out the shoes that you're wearing.
Sure.
Because that could be the root of the problem. All right, it's time for Dean's Thoughts. That's a time when I share something I've written about the intersection between running and faith. Well, what is 1 + 1? The answer might surprise you. What do we take for granted that we know? This is called mind and body. We all have preconceived notions. Most of them are right. Some of them are wrong. And some are not as simple as we perceive. For example, we all believe that we will have sunlight tomorrow. So far, we're 100% on this one. Some people believe that going outside with your hair wet will cause you to get sick. That is not true, but many people believe it. And there is a third category I'd like to explore a little more deeply. Very often, the thing we believe is not as simple as we make it out to be. For example, let's take the simplest and most concrete example of black and white. Math. There is nothing more definite than math, right? So let's ask this question. What is 1 + 1? No brainer, right? The answer is obviously 2. But what if I told you it's not that simple? For example, what if you took a bucket of water and poured it into a larger bucket and then added another bucket of water? How many buckets of water would you have? In that case, 1 + 1 = 1. Or how about a teaspoon of sugar plus another teaspoon of sugar? That would yield 2/3 of a tablespoon. In this case, 1 + 1 = 2/3. I could cite other examples, but you get the idea. 1 + 1 does not always equal 2. Now think about how you feel when you run. Sometimes it hurts, right? Well, what if we look at it differently? What if we frame the discomfort alongside the pain of a kidney stone attack? Doesn't hurt so much in that context, does it? Our mind and our body are connected. No, let me correct that. Our mind and our body are one and the same. In a study called Mindset Matters, Exercise and the Placebo Effect, published in Psychological Science in 2007, a group of 84 hotel room attendants were told that the work they do qualifies as real exercise and meets the Surgeon General's recommendations for exercise requirements. That's it. Then they let them go back to work. A second group was told nothing, but their results were measured alongside the first group. After 4 weeks, the first group, who suddenly believed they were getting more exercise despite the fact that their behavior didn't change, showed improvement in weight, blood pressure, body fat composition, hip-to-weight ratios, and BMI. The second group showed no changes. What we believe is more important than simple positive thinking and happiness. It can and does manifest itself in our physical bodies. Now let me ask this question. Do you think it's important how we identify with the discomfort of your run? You bet. It makes all the difference. Philippians 4:8 says, "Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things." I know it is hard to send our brain into another direction other than the path of least resistance, but we must do it. The Bible tells us to fill our mind with good, pure, and positive thoughts. In order to do that, we must be purposeful about it. If you would like to try to force your brain to think in opposition to conventional thoughts or things that are preconceived notions, try this. The next time you walk out your front door, Look for three things you never noticed before. You will be able to do it. And that will prove to you that you can force your brain to think in unconventional ways. Find the good in everything and focus on that, whether it is running or how you think God sees you. And if you ask God to help you with it, He will change the way you think. One body plus one mind equals one of God's children. We can't separate the mind and the body. Change the mind, change the body. It's science.
It's a really good... That's something good to think about, Dean, for
sure.
Isn't
that a crazy study?
Yeah.
They took these ladies that all they did was say, by the way, what you're doing is good for you, and it suddenly became better for them than they thought it was.
And why is that? It's because they start thinking about other areas of their life. When you start thinking that something is good, that it's kind of what we say about, you know, the 5K challenge. Once you do something hard and you see that it makes a result, it bleeds over to other areas of your life. But it's not necessarily the thing that you do that causes the other things. It's not the 5K challenge made you better at your job.
Mm-hmm.
It's the confidence that the 5K challenge produced in you that made you better at your job. Well, what is confidence? It's all in the mind.
Yeah.
It's purely in the
mind.
That's
right.
And that is what affected the other things, not the fact that you ran 3.1 miles.
That's right. That's the way it works. And I think that today, in today's world especially, we think that we are supposed to struggle. We are supposed to make a big deal out of struggle. And so consequently, it's almost like people lift up the fact that somebody is having a tough time about whatever. And you could name all sorts of things, but we're not going to get into all the politics of all that and that kind of thing. But that we have to stop doing that, because what that does is it makes you dwell on... You mentioned that these hotel workers, they got better. It's because probably the way they thought about themselves probably changed some of their other behaviors.
Exactly.
It made them think...
I should probably
eat a little bit better because I'm getting more exercise than I thought I was.
Right.
The same thing happens in the opposite direction when we go, oh, gosh, you know, I've got this condition and I'm never going to be able to do X.
Yeah.
And you do that and it...
Self-fulfilling prophecy.
And it bleeds over into other areas of your life. And so it's just so important to think on the positive side. I go back to Debbie and her situation, mm-hmm. which I think we talked about on here, where... She believed she had asthma for her entire life. Mm-hmm. She was diagnosed with asthma as a child. Mm-hmm. Well, she's no longer taking asthma medication. She's in her 60s now, and she just stopped taking asthma medication.
Yeah.
Now, did she have asthma and she got over it, or is it something? We don't know all the answers. But what I'm saying is she believed she had asthma, and there's a very real possibility that she never had asthma.
Sure.
And when we have to be open to the idea. I was so impressed with that doctor who said, I'm not sure you have asthma. Most of us would look at that and we would go, you've had asthma your whole life. It's okay. Now,
that would
how
be
do I,
reckless how to do say I put, that? Yeah.
How do I put that into context? Because obviously that must be true, or you wouldn't have thought that for 60 years. It wasn't true. And she had the wherewithal to think. And the only way you can do that is to force your brain to kind of go outside the box and think a little differently. And it's made a big difference.
Well, and it's why it's important sometimes to put people in your life that think differently and extra. I mean, what does scripture say? The wise man surrounds himself with a multitude of counsel.
Mm.
It doesn't say surround yourself with a multitude of people that think just like you.
Yeah.
It's counsel. Counsel is often things we don't want to hear.
Yep.
Or things that we do want to hear that we've never thought of.
Yeah.
And all of that is simply in the 6 inches between your ears.
That's right.
Purely.
Yep. So a couple of things. First of all, just like the Bible verse says, think in ways that are good.
Mm-hmm.
But also challenge your assumptions about things as well.
Sure.
Because that can push you into a better frame of mind as well.
Mm-hmm.
So try that. You just might like it.
Good word, Dean.
Have you always wanted to read through the entire Bible but never found the time to do it? Well, let me do it for you. Sign up for the self-paced Bible in a Year Challenge and start listening today. Every day, I read a few chapters of the Bible and give you running or walking tips and encouraging quotes. You must be a Run Club member for access to this exciting challenge. So, if you're not a member, sign up today and get started. If you are a member, what are you waiting for?
Every week, I share a reason why running and or walking is so awesome. This week, we've already mentioned it. Running watches are fun. I mean, yeah. Come on. They're just fun. I just got a new watch. And
I just got a brand new watch. This is the first watch I've probably had in 10 years that's not a hand-me-down from one of my kids.
Wow.
They get the new watches.
Man.
And so I went and got a new watch, and they're all jealous now.
What is that one?
It's a Garmin Fenix.
Fenix, okay. Yeah. Cool.
And now they're jealous. I'm like, well, I've been getting your hand-me-downs for all these years.
Yeah, so it's about time.
I treated myself.
That's right. Yeah, I like mine too, and it does crazy stuff that you never really thought about before.
Yeah.
And it's fun to watch those things.
Talk about the mind and what we just talked about, and I said this at the outset of this podcast. If this watch, I'm convinced, if it tells me I slept bad, even though I know I slept good, I start feeling like I slept bad.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's purely mental. So sometimes ignore the watch.
Yeah, sometimes you do have to do that. That's true. Yeah. Well, you know, I remember the day when we just had to, you got through with a run, and then you got in your car and you drove where you just ran just so you could see how far you ran. Because
you had
really
paint marks on the road. Yeah. I used to paint the mile markers on the road.
Yeah.
And that hasn't been that long ago, Dean.
No.
I mean, it really hasn't. I mean,
I guess
when we
not.
Started Run for God, I was still doing that. So 15 years ago, I was still doing that.
Yeah. Well, there were GPS watches.
There were, but not everybody had one.
I mean, yeah.
You had to be rich to get one back then.
Yeah.
I still used the paint in the car because it was free.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I remember back in, back in the 80s, that GPS wasn't even a thought.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was whole.
And it started with the whole FootPod. Do you remember that? That was the first thing I got. The Nike came out with the, there was actually a little device you put in the sole of the shoe.
And it basically counted your steps.
And you had to calibrate it based on the way you run. And I mean, it could be a half mile off on a long run, but we thought that was the greatest thing, you know.
Do you know how I got my first GPS watch? I ordered something for my bike. I don't even remember what it was, but I ordered something. And for whatever reason, they sent me a watch, a GPS watch in the mail, along with whatever I had ordered.
Mm-hmm.
I never figured out why I got that, but I did. And this was back when they were notoriously inaccurate.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a GPS thing. And you had to, it was this little box thing you had to wear on your shoulder.
A beacon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you had the watch. It kind of, you know, anyway. But yeah, we've come a long way.
And the first ones, they were like huge.
Yes.
The first Forerunners.
I had one of the Forerunner 201.
Yeah.
Yep. I had one of those. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, we've shared several studies today. We do that a lot. But here's a question for you. What do you think we need to study? Mm. What do you think would interest you? Is there something that you've always thought about and wondered that you would study from our
You know, we've talked so much about studies, but we've never conducted a study.
No.
We need to conduct a study.
You think?
I think it would be interesting.
Can we get some government funding for that?
I doubt it.
Because what we would want to do would be something useful. We can't get government funding for useful things.
Yeah.
It made me think about, you know, one of the things that I think is I would like to know ground contact time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how does ground contact time affect injury rate?
It has to increase it, I would think.
That's my knee-jerk
reaction.
Yeah, you would think so.
Yeah.
The more time you spend on the ground, it seems like the more likely you are to have injury issues.
Right.
But then that would mean elite athletes wouldn't get injured. because they have lower ground contact time. And that doesn't make sense. So I would love to study it and just to see if there's any kind of a relationship there at all. If you want to know, you know, some of these watches will measure ground contact time, but if you want to know your ground contact time, you know, the best way to figure it out is find a bunch of pictures of you running and notice how many of the pictures are you completely off the ground and how many of them you have your foot on the ground, and you'll know whether or not you have, because you go out there and look. Take an elite athlete and look at how many times they're caught actually with their foot on the ground versus not. You'll find that most of the pictures of them are them off the ground.
So I just found a fallacy in what I just said then. So if my assumption were correct that the more ground contact time would mean more injuries, then what does that say about walkers? Because they very rarely get injured.
That's true.
And their ground contact time is 100%.
That's true. So that's a good point.
I don't know. Maybe we need to do a study on this.
We need to do a study on it. Yeah, for sure.
What is the hypothesis, conclusion? What is it? The scientific method. We need to brush up on that.
Yep. Along the same lines, how about a correlation between injuries and the pace that you run based on your ability? In other words, maybe you use heart rate. How, if you never get outside of zone two, you know, you never go higher than zone two or three, you never get into zone four or five, do you have less injuries than somebody who spends a lot more time in zone four and five?
I think your knee jerk says yes, but when you really start to think about it and you thought, no, probably not.
Yeah, I
don't know.
That's why it would be a good thing to study, right?
So ground contact time in relation to injuries.
And then
I think results would be all over the board.
And then pace versus
injury.
Yeah, intensity of pace versus injury.
Because all you hear is, I mean, intensity opens the door for more injuries, but what does that mean?
And then the other thing that I thought about was, I would love to know how your thinking affects your injury rate. I am convinced that is a big factor in injury rate, that the more positive you think, the less you get injured. I would almost bet that there's a relationship there.
But I don't know how you quantify that, because, I mean, I've said many times when I was, you know, I had cancer when I was 19 and 20 years old, and I had to do, that's back when chemotherapy was just hours and hours and hours.
Yeah.
And I was in a room with people way older than me in most instances. And in my brain, this was the arrogance of a 19, 20 year old. I didn't have cancer. These doctors were morons. I was just going through the motion. I didn't have cancer. And I think it was that way of thinking that I went through it no problem. I mean, I had pretty serious cancer, but I didn't think I had it, you know, and I didn't act like I had it. I didn't want people knowing that I had it. I didn't want the sympathy. I didn't have it. I'm just going because my mom would beat me to death if I didn't go do these chemo treatments. And I breezed right through it. And the people that, because I saw them, you know, families would come in, and it's, oh, woe is me. And I'm not saying anything bad, but I think it does affect how you go through a struggle or trial.
For sure.
Is how you mentally think about it.
Yep.
So I'm not saying that ignore your doctor when they say you have cancer, but have a good outlook.
Well, and injuries are the same way.
Sure.
I've just gotten over a relatively serious injury. I mean, it took me 2 weeks to, I mean, it was bad enough that I couldn't walk without limping, and I've gotten over it. But I think that the reason why I got over it, I think that for a lot of people would have stopped running, first of all, completely, and would have been convinced that they had a major problem. And I think it could have manifested itself and made it much worse.
Sure.
Same thing. It's from an injury, cancer, whatever it is. Did I have an injury? Most certainly.
Mm-hmm.
We're not saying that you don't have injuries, but the way you get over them for sure makes a difference. Mm-hmm. But I also think it makes a difference because I think there are a lot of people who are convinced they have an injury that just have some intense soreness over something too.
Sure.
And that makes a difference. Anyway, those are some things I think we should study. How about a trivia question for this week? This one, for shoe geeks, this is a good one for shoe geeks. You know, a lot of people just love running shoes and just talk about running shoes. So which running shoe company has the highest share of the market in the United States?
That's a tough one.
Isn't it? It didn't used to be, but it is nowadays. And I think the answer might surprise you. So if
Did it used to be Nike?
Yes.
Okay. So it's not Nike anymore. We can say that. That's a good hint.
Yes. Yes. Nike still sells more shoes, though, than other companies, but not running shoes. So.
I believe that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. All right. If you know the answer to that, send it to dean@upward.org. And if you're the first member to answer that question correctly, then you will win $20 off in the store. And I'll leave you with this motivational thought of the week. I don't know if this is a motivational thought or a motivational quote, but it is thought-provoking, and I liked it. It comes from G.K. Chesterton. Chesterton. His name's hard to say. He said, "To love means loving the unlovable. To forgive means pardoning the unpardonable. Faith means believing the unbelievable. Hope means hoping when everything seems hopeless." I just love that quote, and it really doesn't have...
Yeah, that's a motivational for sure.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's easy to love people that everybody loves, or to forgive someone who's easy to forgive, but it's doing it when it's hard that makes the biggest difference, don't you think?
Yep.
Think about, you know the story of Ernest Shackleton? Ernest Shackleton, well, you need to read that story. That's a great story. Shackleton was a guy who they were trying to get to the South Pole. And in the process of trying to get to the South Pole, they wound up getting their ship frozen in place. And they spent 6 months, 9 months out in Antarctica. And Ernest Shackleton had his crew out doing things like playing soccer to keep their spirits up. It was a really, really hard thing for him to keep everybody's spirits up, but that was his goal, and he lost zero people during that process. It's an amazing, amazing story. So if you've never heard the story of Ernest Shackleton, you need to look that one up. It's an amazing story. All right. Make sure that you're sharing this podcast with others so that we can tell more people about Jesus. And until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, Dean.
For more information about Upward Running, visit upwardrunning.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There is nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.